Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This week, a conference title is on the line.
They got an offensive line. That's something that is going to be a great matchup because they have one of the best offensive lines in the country, and we feel we have one of the best defensive lines.
I mean, the excitement right now for our program and our guys, it's off the charts. I mean, this is what to do it for, right?
This is a Pac-12 Championship Week edition of Dirt and Spray.
Visit Allen Webb Mitsubishi in the Vancouver Auto Mall or online at allenwebbmitsubishi.com.
It's going to be right. To the 10, 15, McHale to the 20, upfield to 30. He's off to the races. He is off to the 40. He's at the 30. He's at the Beaver 20. You have got to be kidding me. He has done it again. Touchdown, Ducks.
Pac-12 Championship Week with Dirt and Spray on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Happy holidays to everybody officially now. Thanksgiving is over.
It's December, man.
It is December.
You start your advent calendar?
No.
You pop up on the first door of that bad boy?
No, because you know what? If you're not going to give me a real great advent calendar, I don't need to eat generic milk chocolate shaped Isabel. Give me like a Reese's peanut butter cup every day.
You know, do those ring countdowns. You take a ring off every day, one day closer to Christmas.
No, I'm
live
not
a
in.
Little, buddy. Come
no,
on.
No, not in on that one. All right, we got a lot to get to. Normally at this segment, we would do the NFL whip around.
Yeah, we got distracted today, though. Too much going on.
Well, we didn't really get distracted. We got everything got broken up because Chris Peterson decided to up and leave.
Yeah, we got blindsided from the weak side. Safety blitz.
Boy, no, Washington said
coverage rolled over.
Our safety was disappointing, but guess what, Portland Radio? Bow down. And we did. We had
did.
To bow down.
That's what we did.
So we'll get to the NFL whip around probably at 2 o'clock. We'll just move it over there. It was a good weekend in the NFL. Great game between the Niners and Ravens.
Yeah.
But let's continue talking some college football because we just got to the Civil War. As we mentioned, mainly talked about how cold it was, and I think the average temperature was around 27 degrees.
Yeah, somebody had texted in, too, the War for the Roses in 2009 was colder. Now, I was at that game, but I was also a student, so I was in a different state of mind, if you will, at that game, so I don't remember the temperature around it vividly.
Yeah, the one just a couple years ago that I went to.
I just remember the outcome and the after party.
When they won 69-10.
Yeah.
I left at halftime, and that game was really cold, too. That was more of a night feel.
Okay.
But I don't think it was as cold as it was Saturday.
Man, my balls are freezing, man.
I'm guessing all the Utes fans are pretty much laughing after their game was
oh,
played in the snowstorm.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Well, first of all, I got my first trash talk from a Duck fan.
Okay, how did it go?
It went well. It went well. There was a big group of us. It was a coworker, and then she had her party there, and me and my guys were hanging out, and we're right next to each other, kind of sharing laughs, sharing food, heating up together, whatever.
Yeah.
And this guy walks past. I'd seen him earlier, but he didn't say anything. He walked past the second time, and I'm standing probably the most outside of our tailgate. And he walks past. This guy's wearing an Oregon kilt. And he turns.
That's intense.
You kind of judge people, and I looked at him, and I was like, oh, he looks like he's probably a nice guy.
Sure.
He turned to me right after I thought that and went, beefing, huh? Yeah, what are you here for? And I went, hopefully a win. Oh, let's get to a bowl game, baby. Yeah. He goes, you're going nowhere. What a waste of time you are. And I went,
okay.
What?
Okay. All right.
And then somebody in the tailgating party that I don't think I knew them, because everybody heard him say it to me.
Yeah.
And a couple people went with the, oh, that's okay, you know, thing. And I'm like, hey, you don't need to give me sympathy. It's not that serious. But somebody responded right away and was like, what kind of panties you wearing under that thing? And it was actually a Duck fan that said it to him. He didn't stop. He just kept walking.
He just kept going. An easy response of what are you doing here would be, well, my team is playing today. Did you know that? Who knows how the game's going to go? But there is an Oregon State game today as well at Autzen.
I was pretty drunk at that time, so I couldn't really react positively. And then we ended up being on KGW.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah.
On the news. Big newsman over there.
Well, I tried not to be. I didn't want to be in that. He walked over. It's like, oh, no.
So was it sports guys or people with the side human interest tailgating?
No, it was Orlando Sanchez. Oh. And he walked over. I was going to introduce myself, too, but I didn't say hi to Mike Yam. I was hammered. I didn't want people to go, oh, I'm meeting him for the first time. And he's hammered.
They have a big fan of the work you do.
So I'm standing to the side of the camera.
He walks away going, okay, that explains noon to three.
That's how you do the show, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like when you don't want to be called on in a class, so you do what you can as a kid to avoid eye contact, and you end up getting picked anyway?
That's the worst feeling.
I moved to the left off the camera. I was like, I don't want to be on this. And I moved to the side. I was like, everybody else with me wants to be drunk and be that guy.
They'll all be the fan.
Let them be that. Well, of course, the first question, what does the Civil War mean to you? And he puts the mic right in my face. I didn't know what to say. I went, it means the Beavers can beat the Ducks, baby!
And gave a couple of fist pumps.
And then everybody wooed, and then asked other people. Luckily, he edited me out, and all you see me doing is wooing.
Oh, you didn't make the list, huh? Didn't make the cup?
No. I didn't give him much. Russ was like, whoa, the radio guy says almost nothing. I go, you know what? It's actually better that way.
Yeah, you don't want me on camera right now. That wouldn't end up well.
But,
you should have filibustered. You should.
Well, actually, thank you for asking me the question.
On my radio.
History of the Civil War.
On the radio program I co-host on 1080 The Fan, the home of the Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, you didn't even give us a plug, man. Yeah. You could have given a TV plug.
You should have hijacked that thing.
Tune into The Fan Monday, baby! Civil War reaction!
I didn't want to do that. What did you make of the game, though?
I mean, the game sucked. The game was awful. That first half.
Game was great for B-Fan because they hung within the point spread. That was it.
Sure.
That's the only reason the game was great.
You don't have to jump in a river, so you got that going for you.
It wasn't even, though, so bad that it'd be memorable for being awful.
No.
Like the toilet bowl.
Right. That's memorable for 0-0. This game, I mean, you had a couple of plays, which is almost even
worse.
The
only thing anybody's going to... Oh, that was Mikhail Wright's kickoff return.
No, even the kickoff... Look, Mikhail Wright is a stud, and he's been great. There's no memorable moment from that game. Not one. The kickoff was just kind of like... Yeah. Duck fan around us was like, oh, he's going to score. Okay. Again, I don't know if it was... Oregon State and being such a dog and not winning in Autzen since 07, I don't know if it was a hangover from ASU. I don't know. Cold, that stadium was pretty dead considering. I've been to games, dude, where I couldn't hear. Like, shout kind of sucked. There was not a lot of energy in that building. And I don't know what the causes were. Maybe it was all of those.
I think it's a combination of every factor you brought up.
It might have been, but this is not going to be a memorable Civil War. It might be for B-Fan if they can become a good program because they go, remember we were 5 wins and only lost by 14. Other than that, I don't know what you remember from that game.
Well, I think for Oregon State, too, you got momentum going into the offseason. So you feel good about that. And there's going to be a lot of time to talk about Oregon State, where the program can go, what guys are going to stick around. Is Hodgins going to try and go to the NFL? There's a lot of time to get into that now that their season is over. I do slightly disagree with you. I was wondering for most of the day what that game would have looked like with Jake Luton. I'm not saying Oregon State would have won, but with how bad Oregon is on offense right now and just incompetent to put points on the board, it did make me wonder. I mean, that game was 17-3, and by every calculation, it should have been 31-3 at the half. They dominated. Oregon State couldn't move the football. It was 3-and-out. They had a couple of times where they moved a little bit, but Oregon State was constantly starting inside their own 10-yard line. Basically, on every drive, it felt like Oregon was getting the ball at midfield every single time, and they couldn't score. I could not wrap my head around it, and I think that goes to just the malaise of the fan base of, really? Like, Oregon State, man, I'll tip my cap. They were good defensively, and they had one of those kind of games against Washington earlier this year as well. But when they're on the...
Are they good? Were they good defensively, or was Oregon bad offensively?
I think there's always a combination of both. I think there has to be a combination of both. It's not just one side being terrible or one side being great. There's a combination. I would probably put more eggs in the basket of Oregon sucks on offense right now than I would Oregon State all of a sudden is the 85 Bears. But when you're watching a defense that just gave up 50-something points and forced 5 turnovers... And you see your team only muster, up until the fourth quarter, 10 offensive points because one of their touchdowns came on special teams. There's not a lot to be cheering. There's not a lot to be excited about. They should have put that game away early. It should have been a blowout. If Jalen Redd, doesn't fumble onto the pylon, maybe there's a different story and you win 31-10 and you feel slightly different. But the way that they played offensively, I think, put everybody to sleep. And then you add on the fact that There was the gut punch of a loss last week, and everybody's still trying to get over losing to ASU, the cold weather. It was a very forgettable Civil War, I would say, for both teams.
No doubt. It was a pretty boring game in general, but I did have a moment. I looked up at the scoreboard, and it was right before Habibi Leikio scored the go-ahead, like, mm-hmm. games over touchdown. And I looked up, and I was just like, how is this the score?
It was a 17-10 game with like 2 minutes left or whatever it was.
Yeah, and when I realized that in the fourth quarter, I was like, wow, Oregon State's not only going to cover the spread, they're like kind of still in this.
They had the ball with the chance to tie the game.
Yes, they had that drive where they could have tried to tie it, and they came up just short, and Oregon eventually put it away. Where does this put Oregon for you in the Pac-12 championship game? Because you mentioned this before the show, and I do think this is 100% right, because I've seen it too. You would think that Oregon season is done and that they won the Civil War based on everything you see on like social media or opinion pieces.
Well, also on top of their season being done, also a huge disappointment, apparently, that going 10-2 doesn't count for anything and winning the North doesn't matter anymore. It's amazing to me. I've never experienced more in terms of media reaction and a lot of fan reaction. I've never been around a more disappointing 10-2 season. And if you told anybody in August that Oregon was going to go 10-2 and win the North and go 8-1 in conference with wins over Washington, Washington State, Stanford, smoking USC, and continue their streak in the Civil War, nobody's saying no to that. Like I read an article last night that was all the, you know, Oregon State progressing, Oregon regressing. It's like, yeah, I mean, Oregon has not looked good the last 2 weeks, but I tweeted it out on Saturday. I'm not going to allow the last 2 weeks of turd sandwiches on offense to distract me from the fact that this team in year two under Mario Cristobal won the North and they have a chance to win the Pac-12 on Friday.
And the biggest threat, by the way, to you in the North just walked away today.
Right. And you're about to bring in back-to-back nationally ranked top 10 recruiting classes. Like P1 Tyler tweeted us a few moments ago and said, is it crazy to think that Oregon State has more forward momentum than Oregon? And I don't want to take anything away from what Oregon State has accomplished, man. They shocked everybody in the Pac-12 this year. They were a couple of plays away from going to bowl eligibility. And this game was another example of the fight and the kind of program that they've turned into with John Lynn Smith. When Jake Luton was announced out, I figured this thing was going to be a blowout. They don't stand a chance. Jebbia played well, and as we just talked about, they were a touchdown away from winning that game, or tying that game in the fourth quarter. But Oregon just rattled off a 10-2 season, which don't happen very often in program history. I'm not going to get spoiled by 2008 to 2014 and act like this is just clockwork. You win 10 games every year.
Yeah, three seasons have really clouded how a lot of Duck fans view success now.
All
it's
of
very
a sudden, 10-2 sucks because you're not scoring enough points, apparently, but anyways, that's a whole different thing. You're about to bring in back-to-back top 10 ranked nationally recruiting classes. If you win on Friday, is it still a disappointment? Like, are we still pooping all over the staff and saying they're terrible? Yeah. And coordinators need to get fired? Like, let's see how this story ends before we write the final chapter.
I have one. We'll read some thoughts coming in at the BetU Today text line coming up next. I was thinking about this yesterday because you're having all this coaching turmoil or turnover, I should say. Like, Matt Luke got fired at Ole Miss. Rumors about who's going where. You notice like two coaches that made significant moves within the staff, Herm Edwards, Tom Herman. Mm-hmm. Herm Edwards started off real good. They were the talk of college football there for a while, especially after that Michigan State win. He just cleaned house on his entire offensive staff. Tom Herman, pretty disappointing year. Look, you can give me injuries all you want. I'm sorry. You're at Texas. Like everybody told us you were the prodigal son after Charlie Strong, and you've been nothing but disappointing. Well, guess what he did? Sweeping coaching changes. This is what's funny to me about Duck Fan. I don't know if I've seen a more disappointed, sad, angry fan base with a team that could win or that won 9 games in year 1 and now is representing the North and won 10 games in back-to-back years with an offensive coach almost ever in my life. And here's the bad news. There is no reason to want to change it. You've just won 10 games and you've won the North. Right. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see Cristobal. Because I think Duck Fan has this assumption, well, all these other coaches are making changes. I don't like Arroyo. They won 10 games. They won the North. What do we need here? So let's talk about that a little bit. This isn't to say that Arroyo has been perfect. Again, I am not a defender every week. But it is a week-to-week thing here. And when you have back-to-back weeks of not looking good offensively, that's when you hear the loudest, the biggest noise, I should say. So we'll read some thoughts on where Oregon is at right now, the Civil War, and some more college football coming up next on The Fan. We got a whole lot more football to get into. Carmelo Anthony named Western Conference Player of the Week. So Neil O'Shea and the Blazers got that going for them.
They do, man. Break them up. They're playing good right now.
Yeah, they've won three in a row against two teams.
That's right. They beat the Bulls twice, didn't they?
Yeah. I forgot about that. They got a home-and-home done with an Eastern Conference team like super early in the year. We're talking just Oregon kind of Pac-12 stuff. Like, here's my point. It's not to say that coaches shouldn't be more forward-thinking and go, okay, this is a weak spot for us. Let's identify it. It's more of just like how often, and I'm asking this question seriously, not a rhetorical question here. How often do you hear about the successful program who fires their coach on one side of the ball during a successful season? A disappointing season?
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often, man.
And that's my thing is the anti-Arroyo people, they're out there. There's a lot of them. And I'm not going to question you. You don't like the offense. I get it. There's a lot of weeks where it just doesn't flow well. But why would Crystal Ball make a move this year? They've won 10 games. They might win 11. They might win the Pac-12 title. They've at least won the North. And they're probably they might go to a Rose Bowl. If Utah wins, Utah, in my opinion, will get the playoff spot.
Unless LSU loses
to Georgia, because that is the thing. And by the way, I wouldn't argue against that.
And some people are trying to argue for Oklahoma, too. There is still a lot to be decided in that regard.
But there's still a possibility you could end up with a Rose Bowl appearance and potentially a Rose Bowl championship.
You could.
Is he really going to go into the offseason and go, you know what? My reflection of the season is we're not good enough. That just doesn't happen in football, man.
Yeah, here's the other thing, too, with it. I understand. I always have the Marcus Arroyo complaints. I get it. He's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think he's an elite offensive coordinator. Doesn't scare anybody. I totally understand that. The only pushback I've ever made in that regard is I don't like when all the blame is put on his shoulders. Right?
Where was the Avalos outrage last week when they gave up big play big play?
Nobody there, man. And I think largely Justin Herbert is lucky that he is such a beloved figure in Oregon that there's not more animosity towards him. I'll use an analogy here. Look at Washington the last 2 years. Last year when Washington sucked on offense, who did everybody blame?
I think
mostly Jake Browning, right? Retired of him. He's overrated. Washington fans were excited for him to graduate.
This year, it's turned to their OC.
This year, because Eason is the chosen guy, and he's the big-time local recruit, and he's the guy that's going to take the offense to another level. Well, now it's Bush Hamden sucks. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Bush Hamden didn't get any criticism last year. He did get a little bit, but the majority of it went to Jake Browning. And I think if Oregon was in a spot right now the last 2 years where they maybe had a quarterback that people didn't like or you questioned or you know, in the fan base, there was a debate about is he good or is he not? There'd probably be more animosity towards the players on the field. But because Justin Herbert is so beloved, that's the first finger that everybody points to. Like, did we watch on Saturday? Is anybody going to try and tell me that Justin Herbert looked good?
No.
He was throwing balls into the turf. He missed a wide open guy in the end zone. He couldn't execute simple passes against one of the worst pass defenses in the conference.
He's looked really bad the last 2 weeks. He's looked off the last 2 weeks.
Really bad the last 2 weeks, and I don't know how to put my finger on it because somebody texted in, use the eyeball test. If Oregon plays anybody, blah, 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 are they going to beat them? And I'd say probably right now, no, but that's also the last 2 weeks. They went on a stretch in the middle of the season offensively where they looked really good. Running the football, throwing the football. They got Juwan Johnson back, and he was dynamic. They had a little bit of game going there offensively. And for whatever reason, the last 2 weeks, it's just flown completely out the window, and they better find it by Friday, because if they don't, they're going to get their ass kicked by Utah. But that's just been my main thing the entire time with Marcus Arroyo is I get it. If you don't think he's the answer, that's fine. But make sure you spread the blame around because it's not all on the offensive coordinator. And the other part of it that needs to be acknowledged, and this has been we've observed this a little bit in our interviews with him, Mario Cristobal has a much bigger hand in the offense than anybody ever talks about. And there's this notion that if you fire Marcus Arroyo, you're going to bring in the next Lincoln Riley and you're going to go five wide like Mike Leach and you're just going to sling it around. Newsflash, man. Mario Cristobal, this is his program.
He don't like that. Yeah, he don't want to do that.
He's running his style. Like, I remember we interviewed him after the Washington game, and he admitted that he was too stubborn in the first half, and then they changed things up in the second half.
He
doesn't call the plays. He doesn't put the game plan together, but he has a big part of what they do offensively.
I bet you he's got that veto power, and once in a while, he'll go, hey,
run the ball.
Marcus, run the ball.
Run the ball.
We're running the ball.
That's what he wants to do. And I think with every head coach,
he's an offensive lineman, Dirt. It's in his
he's SEC, man.
Pedigree. It's in him.
Right? He wants to be Alabama.
Yes,
this is what he wants to build.
Well, Alabama's not even Alabama anymore.
No, not anymore. But when you look into the early era of Nick Saban when he was there, I mean, they didn't have any creativity on offense. They were bigger, they were stronger, they played defense, and they ran the football. Every head coach in the country has pluses and minuses. Every single one outside of maybe Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney and Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer was a douchebag off the field, so he has minuses too. You take the strengths and you live with the weaknesses. Mario Cristobal's strengths are recruiting, the culture, the tone that he sets for the program. All of those are positives that you haven't seen in a long time at Oregon.
All the players,
right?
Yeah.
The weaknesses are going to be, this is the offense that he wants to run. So we can all throw Marcus Arroyo under the bus, but until you get Cristobal to totally take a step back like Saban finally did and say, yeah, go ahead, go wild with the offense, this is what you're going to get.
Okay, they've played, how many games can they play in a year? 24, right? Yeah, 20 in a regular season. You count the two, let's count the Pac-12 title game and let's count just the bowl game. So you count those together, you got 26 games, right? One of them you haven't played, so 25. Of the 25 games they've played as him as the head coach, they've won 19 of them. How do you win 19 of 25 games? And then Joe Blow, who is sitting his fat ass on the couch every Saturday to watch you with his bonbons and Coca-Cola, is telling you that you're not doing a good enough job and you've won 19 of 25 games.
Right.
That's my point, guys. It's pretty hard to break through on that kind of stuff unless you have very disappointing seasons. When you have disappointing seasons, you get changes. You get maybe different. Let's look at Auburn, right? Auburn is kind of the story, like the surprise story of college football. People thought their defensive line would be good. They largely have been a pretty good team overall this year.
No, they were a few plays away from being undefeated, man.
Absolutely. They were close. What did Auburn do? Well, Auburn sucked last year, and then Gus Malzahn was like, you know what? I have to call the plays again. That's who I am. I'm an offensive play caller. I'm calling the plays. He took over, and what's Auburn been? Right? So you need bad things to happen or mediocre things to happen before you get all whole sweeping changes through a program. Now, I think you hit on something very interesting there. I think the local tie is a big part of it. I think being thrust into a UW rivalry game as your first start where they ended up giving up 70.
And being on the worst team in Oregon in the last 25 years.
Is a big part of why, and look, deservedly so. I really root for the kid. I'm rooting for him in the NFL. I tweeted out on Saturday. I watched him when he came out for senior day. I gave him a round of applause. Yeah. Like, that was cool. I'm happy for local kids that get that opportunity. He has been horrific. And if we're just going to keep pointing the finger at Arroyo, fine. Do that. But if you're not going to acknowledge that the quarterback is not playing well, he's not reading defense. Like, Oregon State's defense isn't good. He couldn't read them. We're just going to have to agree to disagree here, and there's nothing left to be said. Because you can point the finger at Arroyo all you want. But guys, when I'm watching these games, the pass-run ratio, it's a pretty even balance. You have a potential top quarterback in an NFL draft on your roster who's been there for 4 years. He's been a starter for a long time. If you can't trust him for 20 to 25 passes, we're just going to agree. We're going to disagree, and we don't need to have the conversation. And Arroyo has given him chances. He's not making them. And then when he runs and gets stopped, Arroyo sucks. Like, everything points to just Arroyo, to where I think you're being accurate and fair here. The quarterback is not playing good football right now, and I don't know what it is.
It's hard to put your finger on it, man. They were much better early in the year, and they got a chance to shut everybody up on Friday.
They do.
Because now everybody's picking Utah to win that game. The offense sucks. Look how bad you've been.
That's
couldn't
a
beat anybody.
That's a six-point spread, right?
They're about a touchdown underdog in that game. And this is the funny part about finishing the story before it's done. What if they come out and look good offensively Friday and they win that game?
Well, Justin Herbert's a hero.
Sure.
Marcus Arroyo still sucks.
And still sucks.
That's what it is. When Oregon wins, it's everybody else. When Oregon loses, it's Marcus Arroyo. If you don't like him, that's fine, but that seems to be the common theme here when I'm watching it on social media. My final thought on this, and I think I said this last week, but I'll say it one more time. This is not to diminish Justin Herbert in any way. I'm still not sure Oregon has the right personnel for what they dream of what their offense will be. Yeah. And part of that, it does involve the quarterback running once in a while. If Herbert would just keep the ball.
It finally opened the offense up a little bit in the second half of that game.
Yes. You just see how big of a difference it makes. But he, and Mario's told us this, he has that choice. And most of the time he chooses to hand off. So Ducks still won the Civil War by 14 points, 24-10. A lot of going on in college football. We'll continue with college football. And just what did you make of Ohio State, Michigan? Boy, Jim Harbaugh didn't show up. And then how about the Iron Bowl? We'll talk some more college football, maybe get some NFL. We got the whip around at 2. All of that is ahead.
Hey, welcome back in 136. Big news today. Distracted us in the first hour. Put off a little Civil War talk, and that is that Chris Peterson stepping down at Washington. Jimmy Lake going to take over as head coach. They're saying that Peterson's going to stick around the athletic department. And joining us now to talk about all that and the big news and the reaction in Seattle, Chris Fetters, friend of the show. We've had him on a number of times over the years, at Chris_Fetters on Twitter, editor of Dogman.com. Chris, thanks as always for the time, man. I'm sure it's a busy day for you. Just walk me behind. What's the reaction like? Did people see this coming? Where's the shock value? How are people handling this news in Seattle?
Yeah, I think Chris Peterson was just doing this to try to one-up the Ducks and the Utes for championship week. I think he finally had had enough of being behind the scenes and wanted a little bit of the spotlight to himself. But, yeah, this is a major bombshell, guys. This is something that, you know, we've been hearing now that he didn't really tell anybody about it until, like, as late as maybe Saturday night.
Wow.
And, you know, having covered Chris Peterson since he came to Montlake, you know, one thing that you really understood with him is that he is a grinder. They are so meticulous and so detail-oriented and are such game planners up there. They would, you know, they probably spend 100 hours a week if they could up there scheming and designing and game planning and what have you. And that kind of takes a toll on you. It just has to. And,
yeah.
You know, you could just tell over the last few weeks, especially with the offense stuttering along and, you know, they had a couple of good games. I think even against Oregon and Utah, they played pretty well. But just the questions and I think that just the fact that they weren't getting anywhere with it, And the continual questions from the media, people like me, you know, just kept asking, what's going on? What are you doing? You know, how are you fixing this? You told us that, you know, you were going to take a deep dive into it after the Rose Bowl, and it doesn't feel like anything's gotten done. And I think that took a toll on him as well. And I think also just the general tenor and flow of where things are going in college football with the transfer portal and now guys being able to get paid possibly for their likenesses and stuff down the road. And I just think that there are certain things where all of a sudden he just kind of realized, you know what, I need to step away for a sec and really kind of get my well-being back in check. I think he was out of balance a little bit, and I think he's a guy that really values kind of that balance between life and work and family and having all those things perfectly aligned. And I just don't think for the last few months that he's felt that way about it.
Yeah. You know, Chris, I saw a report from the voice of the Huskies, Tony Castricone, that he said that last year Peterson had talked about how he was envious of Herm Edwards to have a break and kind of be recharged by coaching. And he used that word recharged in the press release. Is this something that in your mind you think, okay, he'll spend about a year, maybe two as an administrative role of some sort, mainly around the football program before diving back into a college gig? Or do you think maybe because of what you mentioned, the transfer portal, just the way everything kind of is now with college football versus what it was almost a decade ago, maybe he says, I'm just going straight to the NFL?
Well, in our offices, we've been kind of throwing that back and forth because you're right. Recharge is kind of the key word of that entire press statement. And, you know, does he do it like Herm Edwards did it? Is he doing it maybe like, would he do it like the way Dan Hawkins did it in terms of, okay, he took a shot, but now he's back at a place like UC Davis where maybe the pressure isn't as significant. Maybe he can develop guys more and dedicate more of the time to the academic side and things like that. Frankly, guys, I just think he likes his boat too much. I don't think he's leaving anytime soon.
Really?
I think he's – and I know that sounds like a joke, but I'm not joking. I mean, they did a Washington football did a little Twitter kind of day in the life of Chris Peterson a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it really revolved about around him getting on his boat, talking a little bit about what was going on, what was going to happen during the day, did all that stuff in his offices during the day, and then got back on his boat and headed back home. I just think he likes that stuff too much, frankly. And I do think he's going to probably invest in an administrative type capacity a little bit more, invest in the OKG built for life type of philosophy and program that he's built there. And again, it's kind of interesting because you hear the recharge. So he's clearly, he doesn't want to be out of the football side of football.
Right.
But, you know, Jeff Tedford came in and as a consultant at Washington in 2016, it just happened to coincide with the best season they had under Peterson. Does all of a sudden now he think that maybe a consultant role could be the kind of the trick for him where, you know, it you know, he could kind of come and go, and he could kind of coach the coaches, but he doesn't have to be responsible for like anything else. And I just think there are definitely a lot of options on the table for him right now. I just don't think in the short term he's interested in leaving Seattle or UW right now, because obviously he still has a ton invested in it, and not just the players he's recruited, but you know, that staff he's cultivated. I'm sure he wants Jimmy Lake to succeed
right. Wonderfully.
I mean, that's a guy he handpicked. I mean, that succession plan has been in place actually for a little bit in a while now. Once the idea that Jimmy Lake was going to be this huge hot property in the coaching world. You could kind of tell that it made sense, like, hey, maybe they could set it up where Lake could be the guy down the road. I just don't think anybody thought it was going to happen today.
Right. Well, on the consultant part, too, it's almost what Marvin Lewis is doing right now at ASU, right? Mm-hmm. Watching film and going over game plans and that kind of stuff, but doesn't have to do interviews or deal with all the day-in and day-out grind of being a head coach of a program. We're talking with Chris Fetters, dogman.com. Give him a follow on Twitter, @Chris_Fetters. I will ask him, Jimmy Lake taking over, I think a lot of people now wonder, too, just the recruiting impact of this, and that's probably the bonus of having somebody already on staff take over. But that first signing day is a couple of weeks away. What's the recruiting impact? Is it a positive, negative? Is there any way to tell how that's going to play out right now?
Well, we're certainly in the process of talking to all the guys that are currently committed to Washington. It doesn't sound like anybody's going to decommit or what have you. I mean, obviously we're looking at transfer portals as well as with the current team. So clearly there's so much in flux, but it feels like it's going to be a real positive change in terms of recruiting, not just because of the guys that they've recruited already, because Jimmy Lake has had a hand in most of the guys, especially the guys on defense for sure. But even a guy like Sam Huer, the 2021 quarterback from Kennedy, he's a legacy. He's not going anywhere. But I think this also gives rise to the idea of, okay, what's going to happen on the offensive side of the ball? And that's the irony of this whole thing, is that Jimmy Lake has made his name as a defensive guy, but now as a head coach, his first headache is going to be to try to revamp his offense. Does he keep Bush Hampton? Does he go in a different direction? Does he cull some names from his contacts in the college football world or even the pro world, where he had a couple stints as a coach in the NFL? So you've got a bunch of questions there, and then obviously that will have ripples that affect and go into recruiting too. But right now, I think that the instant reaction in terms of recruiting is that it's going to be a net positive. I think Jimmy Lake's going to be more aggressive in the recruiting world and in the recruiting battles than Chris Peterson was. I don't think Chris Peterson, it's not that he didn't want to be competitive in that arena. I think he's ultra competitive in that arena. I just think he always wanted the playing field to be level.
Yeah.
And in the recruiting world, there's no such thing.
No.
And so he was always constantly at odds with that. Whereas Jimmy Lake, I don't think is going to have as much of a problem with kind of the gray areas of recruiting.
Sure,
I think he's going to be a little bit more, he's going to push the envelope, I think, a lot more than Chris Peterson did. But don't get me wrong, it's not that he's all of a sudden going to go full SEC and do all that kind of stuff. I just think he's going to be more aggressive and maybe take a few more chances that a guy like Chris Peterson wouldn't do.
Well, Chris, we're kind of against it, so as quickly as you can, and I'm sorry, I got one more question that I need you to answer, because I'm really curious your thoughts on this. You mentioned how he comes in the beginning, right? He wins, and people are like, oh, man, this guy is special. He's taken us from where we were to the new heights of being at the top of the conference again. And now it seems like it was kind of at a point prior to his resignation where people were starting to go, hey, go win the big game, or what's going on offensively, and starting to gripe a little bit. How do you think he'll be remembered by UW fan, and how will you remember Chris Peterson as the Washington Husky coach?
Well, Peterson's always been super respectful with the media. That's never been a problem. He just very rarely said anything, and he was very good at it. He's like a master of it. He's like the anti-Mike Leach in that respect. I mean, you could kind of tell things were getting to him, but he was never going to verbalize it. He was just never going to give you anything on that score. He's just too smart and just too good and understood it and understood the ramifications. I think the interesting thing is I don't think Chris Peterson's legacy has been written yet, because I still think he's going to be a pretty important part of the program, at least based on the press release and based on what he said. You know, he has that recharging word out there, and that's fine and good, but it doesn't sound like he's going anywhere anytime soon. And so I think it's kind of even like when Don James left, and that was mired in controversy, and a lot of people thought he had quit on the team, and a lot of people respected him for sticking up against the NCAA and whatnot. But his shadow was always around Montlake for years and years because he didn't go anywhere. And everyone was going to be compared to him. So now you've got Jimmy Lake that's going to be right in the same boat. He's going to be in the shadows. Peterson is, and he's going to obviously – he's not going to want to be the focus. But as long as he's always around, there's going to be a comparison between Lake and Peterson. Yeah. There's always going to be what did you do? How did you do this in a way that Chris Peterson would have done it? But in terms of the legacy and like the win-loss record, the bowls and things like that, I just get the sense that, you know, everyone has such an immense respect for Peterson as a coach and as a person that everyone was like, okay, things aren't going well offensively. He's made changes in the past, so we know he's going to make changes again. He's not stuck in a system, but he does need to refresh things. How is he going to go about doing it? So there was a lot of questioning of like, what's he going to do? But there was never a question of people saying, oh no, Chris Peterson should go. You know, Chris Peterson days or his best days are behind him, things like that. I don't think there was ever a question of that. It was always like, okay, how is he going to turn this thing around? Because he had just built up too much equity.
Yeah. Chris Fetters, great stuff. Dogman.com. Check it out on Twitter at Chris_Fetters. A busy day for you, man, in Seattle. We always appreciate you hopping on. Thanks for taking a few minutes for us here in Portland.
Okay, thanks, guys.
There you go. Chris Fetters at Dogman.com. We're against it here. I have a couple of thoughts on that because I think you asked an interesting question, and it relates to where Oregon and Oregon State are at right now with Chris Peterson, the way things ended in Seattle, the recruiting impact of this, Jimmy Lake taking over as the head coach of the Huskies. Some final thoughts on that, how it relates to the Ducks and Beavers, and then we got to start getting into a wild college football weekend and the NFL whip around coming up top of the hour. Back after this on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. I was at the Glorious House Games yesterday.
My zest for life is just at an all-time high.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, hey, coming up in the final hour of the show, NFL picks. Not NFL picks, excuse me, NFL whip around. And a couple leftover NFL tidbits we need to get to and some final thoughts on the Civil War.
I don't know if I'm ready to do the whip around the other way.
We got to whip around, man. You ready?
I'm going to have to gauge when I'm supposed to jump in and yeah. I just let you go. I'm going to assume the crap games you don't need an opinion.
No opinion. You asked Chris Fetters there. Chris Peterson stepping down is the big news of the day about just the rumblings that can come when you don't win the quote-unquote big game, right? I mean, he had his chances, lost in the playoff, lost to Auburn in non-conference. Lost in the Fiesta Bowl, lost last year in the Rose Bowl. It kind of mounted a little
bit. 1-4 bowl record ain't going to be changed at all when we look back legacy-wise. That's going to be part of the story.
And we'll see what bowl game. At 7-5, they're not going to go to a great bowl game this year. Under 500 in the conference at 4-5 in the Pac-12. I do find it interesting when you ask that, though, too, because right now, this is the part about Oregon and Oregon State that I'm scared of going forward. Because when he took over at Washington, they were, Sark had them decent, but they were never going to win the conference, right? They were the little engine that they were always the bridesmaid, if you will.
This down year they had was their positive year.
Right. 7-5, 8-4. That was just kind of Sark every single year, right? So he came in and it took him 2 years, and then he got them in year three. They won the conference and went to the playoff. The next year, they didn't win the conference, but they went to the Fiesta Bowl. And last year, they won the Pac-12. So they had 3 straight years of almost winning the conference, but going to New Year's 6 bowl games. It's amazing, though, how quickly expectations can change. And I've already seen this at Oregon in the span of a year. Like, at the start of the year for Oregon, people said, there are a lot of questions. Can't win on the road. Do you trust Crystal Ball? Mm-hmm. And then they rattle off some wins in the middle of the season, and now it's a huge disappointment that they're not in the playoff, which is just funny to me. But that, to me, is the danger of both Oregon and Oregon State going forward, because Oregon State had the benefit of the doubt this year of zero expectations.
Yes.
Zero. Yeah. Like, no matter what you did, there was if you won 3 games, good little year. 4, good year. 5 was the cherry on top, and they came close to going to a bowl game. That's going to go out the window for both of them next year, because Oregon proved that they can win the North. We'll see what happens on Friday. You're going to keep recruiting, so now the expectations increase, and the same thing's going to go for Oregon State. If Oregon State comes out and looks bad and they go 3-9 next year, right? You're not going to get all these positive articles and look at the direction of the program. Peterson ran into that a little bit at Washington. He built him to that point, couldn't break it down, and then the pressure started to build of why can't you win the big game?
Well, I don't think there's any doubting that he for sure ran into that. I mean, when you get there and look, that when they made the hire, how big that was.
It's
remember
huge.
Athlon did the coaching rankings and you went off. You're like, let him coach the conference before we name him number one. But that showed how big it was. And then the first year he comes in, the second year, and by the third year, he'd figured it out. And they were winning a Pac-12 title, or they were right in the race of it. They were recruiting much better. And they were getting to games that they hadn't been in for a very, very long time.
Yes.
That's just kind of the natural order of things in pro sports in general, not just college sports. I'm not going to allow Twitter Beaver fan, and this isn't a shot at everybody that, you know, I interact with on Twitter, but I'm not going to let Twitter Beaver fan dictate how I feel and what I think about them next year. Because there are obvious things to point out here. They're losing their quarterback. They're losing offensive linemen. They may lose a guy like Isaiah Hodgins who may test the draft waters. Art Pierce is graduating. They may lose a defensive player or two. This isn't going to be the same team coming back, so we can't guarantee that they're going to improve. This might be who they are next year. In the same way, I don't think you should allow... I think certain Duck fans really need to take perspective in their lives, and they have allowed three seasons to now dictate and determine that anything that is short of a playoff or a national championship is almost a disappointment. And I don't know when you guys got to that. I don't know what year specifically did it for you, but it just doesn't happen. There's a reason Oregon was basically Oregon State prior to Mike Bellotti and Phil Knight kind of taking things to the next level in the late 90s there.
Perspective is important.
So I think perspective is what you're going to need the most. On the Peterson front, yeah, I don't know what to say outside of if Jimmy Lake does get to that big game and win, that's going to be part of Peterson's legacy.
You remember
him
for laying the groundwork to get you there without a doubt. But
yes, you will. And even next year and the year after, you're probably going to look at that. I think some skeptics would go, well, Jimmy Lake is inheriting Peterson's players. True. But don't forget, he's the biggest recruiter on that staff. So he was largely responsible for a lot of those key players if they win next year. And then even if they get to that point, to me, it's still not going to matter. Like, if you get to the big game and can't win, that matters. And even if Jimmy Lake doesn't sustain a 10-year run of excellence at UW, if he wins that big game next year or the second year...
They open with Michigan.
Okay, and if they win that game, there are going to be people that go, well, Jimmy Lake did it, Chris Peterson didn't.
Yeah, expectations change as you grow in a program. Peterson was an example of that at Washington, and we'll see how it works with Cristobal and Eugene and Jonathan Smith in Corvallis. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time, locally owned and operated. With six locations to serve you, we've got a bunch of poll questions we need to get to, some final thoughts on the Civil War. We haven't even dove into the NFL yet, some juicy storylines from yesterday, and that's what we'll start with. The NFL Whip Around kicks off the final hour next on 1080 The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.